So we'll say we're on Daf Zayin Omid Aleph, and we're up to Amalei Rav Acha Midifti LeRavina. So let's see if we find the place on the Daf. It's approximately, I would say, maybe three lines down from the top, four lines down from the top. LeRavina. Okay. Now, just a little bit of background here. We're talking about the mitzvah of Meiser Behema and the mitzvah of Bechar. And in both cases, we have a question of sort of Shnayim Oksu Metalis. Why? Because we have a suffix and we don't know whether this Bechar belongs to the Israel or it's obligated to deliver it to the Kohen. And the Gemara on Daf Vav vacillated back and forth whether the Kohen, you remember this Rabbi,
Talk for Kohen,
whether he could grab onto it, and now the Israel becomes Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Araya. So in effect, when we have a Suffolk Bechar, the Brisa says that Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Araya, and the Gemara wanted to be medayik from that it shifts back and forth depending upon in any given moment who's considered the Muchsak, which would mean that Tokfa Kohen is Ein Motzi in Oso Miyada. But that's in case of Suffolk Bechar. So Suffolk Bechar would be a case where, let's say, the mother gave birth to a premature that didn't survive. It died, and the question is whether did it live to that stage of birth where it was a viable being, so that the next one to be born is no longer a Bechar. So that's called the Suffolk Bechar. And we have an objective suffix.
On which is it focusing? On the one that died or on the next one?
The one that died is actually the suffix, but that suffix is a little different. The suffix there is whether it was a viable being or not. Was it a nafel? Or was it ruach? Ruach means it's not a viable being at all. So that's as far as that animal is concerned. But that's irrelevant. That animal is gone.
Right.
What happens now is that the mother gives birth to a second animal, and now the question is whether that animal is included in the mitzvah of Bechar. If the first birth was called Ruach, it wasn't a real viable Nefel, then there was this is the animal that's Peter Rechem, and that generates an obligation of Pidgin Aben. If on the other hand the first animal was a nafel, it was somewhat viable, then what we'd say is that the mother is already a peter rechem for the first birth. But this is only half of the picture. The other half of the picture is that this suffix bechar now is going to have an impact on the mitzvah of meiser behema. What does it mean, Meiser Behema? Meiser Behema means that you have 10 animals in a corral, and you count them one by one, and Asiri Kodesh, the 10th, becomes sanctified as a Bechar, and has to be given, and has to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
So now, what's the overlap between the two? Between number one, Suffolk Bechar, and number two, Meiser Behema. Now, if this Bechar belongs to the Kohen, okay, that's if number one. Now we have an if number two. If number two, that Suffolk Bechar, which may belong to the Kohen, jumps back into the deer, and let's say you had 9 animals in the deer, it could be possible now, this is if number two, that when you start counting 9 and you get to number 10, dafka, this Suffolk Bechar will be the 10th. Now if we combine the two Sveikos, or Tzadei HaSafek, then we have the following problem. And that is that you've potted yourself up in the Chiyuv of Meiser Bechar, of Meiser Behema, with an animal that belongs to the Kohen. Again, if you follow, I'm combining two ifs, two premises. Premise number one is that this Safik Bechar is actually a Bechar. And if it's actually a Bechar, then Yisrael doesn't own the Bechar. He's just obligated to give it over to the Kohen. And number two, if he has an obligation to give it to the Kohen, then there's Halach of Ein Adam Poter Chiyuvo B'Mamon Shel Chavero. In other words, he can't use an animal as the tenth for Maisa Behema if he doesn't own that animal, because now that animal belongs to the Kohen.
But it doesn't matter whether it is the tenth or not the tenth. He can't use it as one of the ten.
So that was the previous sugi where the Gemara says that if he uses it just as one of the ten, so the Mimonafshach. If it's really a Bechar, so he only has nine animals, so he's not Chayv. If on the other hand it's not a Bechar, so it doesn't matter. But once he designates that as number 10, that becomes more problematic because he has other animals in the deer. Again, so I don't know if we're going to go through that whole sugya.
Okay, I hear.
My goal today is to finish up on Safik Bechar and get back to Shnayim Oksa Metalis, Shnayim Aduka Metalis. So it could be that, depending upon what your inclination is, that we'll just, you know, do whatever we can here on this. And anyway, so now what are we up to now? So there's a brisa that says that asfekos nichnasim l'dir l'hisaser, which means the following, that if you have a Safik Bechar, you can allow that Safik Bechar to be included in the deer with the other animals, even though there's a possibility that this Safik will turn out to be the 10th animal that you're going to give to potter up the other 9. So the Gemara says the following, my Sfekos, what is this case that the Bryce is referring to that allows you to take this Safik and put it into the deer? Elam, if you'll assume that it's a Safik Bechar, which means that he has one lamb, and you know, he doesn't know whether that lamb is a Bechar or not, again, based on the previous Leda. And the Bryce says he can use that lamb and combine it together with the other lambs. So Gemara asks, how can you do such a thing? The Pasuk says, in Vayikra Perek Tes Zayin, it says, Ha'asiri Yiyah Kodesh, that the tenth should be sanctified, meaning it becomes Kodesh B'Kedushas Bechor, B'Kedushas Meiser. Right, number 10 becomes Meiser, Meiser Behema. Omar Rachman, the Torah is telling you that you should sanctify it. Velo, to the exclusion, Shukvar Kodesh. If that tenth is already sanctified, for example, in this case of a Safik Bechar, it has what's called the Kedushas Leda, and it means that the Bechar, insofar as it's sanctified, and a Bechar has to be given to the Kohen, mm-hmm. then it already has the status of sanctified, of mm-hmm. Kodesh.
Right.
How then can I now designate it as the Asiri Kodesh, which means Yiyah Kodesh means you should make it into something
that's Kodesh, correct. As opposed to it's already being.
So the Gemara now reinterprets the Braisa. Ella, but rather, what is this case that the Sfekos, the Braisa says, Sfekos nifnosim lidilis aser, what it's referring to is a Safek Pijon Peter Chamor. Now here's a case of a Bechar that has no Kedusha. It's purely Dine Mominos. So what you have is Peter Chamor. Chamor is a non-kosher animal. And the Bechar, the first Leda of this relationship, is such that it has to be given to the Kohen, but it doesn't have any Kedusha. So let's say, for example, I knew for sure that this was a pigeon of a Peter Chamor. Even if I know it as I can ascertain it with absolute certainty, nevertheless it doesn't have Kedusha. And this reflects the statement of Rav Nachman. The Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua, Yisrael Sheyesh Lo Asara, if a Jew has 10 Chamorim and every single one of them is a Safek, okay, this is a very unique case, is Safek Pitre chamor betok beiso. So all these asara fit the following description. They are safek pitre chamor betok beiso. He has 10 chamorim, and every single one of them is a safek whether it's the bechar for its mother. So let's say, for example, you had many different chamoros, you know, asonos that got mixed up, and you don't know which one is given birth to a chamor that's its first petarechem, which one is not. So you have this whole, in a sense, what word am I looking for? A whole
herd.
Excellent. That's the word I need. A whole herd of chamorim, and each one is the suffek whether it's a bechor li'imo or not. Now the law is that a suffek bechor of a chamor, which is called a suffek peter chamor, we have to treat it mitzad suffek as a peter chamor. So in that sense, we have a problem over here because he's got a herd of made up of 10 suffek petre chamor. So what do you do in such a case? And so far he wasn't poda them. So Rav Nachman advocates the following: Mafrish aleim asara siyin. He could take 10 lambs, and by being mafrish aleim asara siyin, he can be matir the isur of this peter chamor. Again, it's all a suffix. And then what he does with these 10 se'in is he's matir se'in and the asir is kodesh. Why? Because pidyon peter chamor is also chayav in ma'aser behema, not the same ma'aser behema as other animals are concerned, where it becomes sanctified l'mizbeach, but rather it has the sanctity of a chiyuv to be given over to the kohen. Vehein shalom. So it's very interesting. What he's going to do is he's going to be mafresh these 10 siyin, and they're going to sort of replace the original safek pitrei chamor. And now, since on the tzad that, let's say in the worst case scenario, each one of the petre chamor is actually a bechor li'imo. So since it's all a question of dini mominos, then by being mafresh these asara siyin, these tlaim, he can be matir any sort of chiyuv that he has vis-a-vis the safek petre chamor. And then since the din is that a petre chamor is also included in the chiyuv maser behema, and that's again because it's not kadosh, it's only dini mominos, then now through these asara siyin he can fulfill his mitzvah b'safek vis-a-vis the peter chamor, remove any vestige of isur that's there. But the chiddush of Rav Nachman is shalom, that even after he does this pidyon of peter chamor by substituting the asara siyin, then he's allowed to keep that tenth for himself, again under the halacha of safek hamotzi mechamel v'araya, mipnei hasafek. Why? Because it could be possible that the chamorim in the group were not really bechoros, and now he only has to do this hafrosh of asara siyin in order to make sure that on the tzad that he was chayav, he was mafresh. But as far as the status of the Bukhar is concerned, the status of the Bukhar was always that of a suffix. So what I want to do is I want to read to you a comment here in the footnote. He writes, he says, Pashinhu, Il Mali Hayu Shalom, Lohaya Tsarach Li Asron. Correct? If not for the fact that these suffix pitrei chamor were not his, then how could he use them to be mafresh maser behema? Because if you take somebody else's maser animal for maser behema, it's not maser behema. So it's a big question here in the Mefarshim exactly what the nature of the chiddush of Rav Nachman is, because basically the very fact that that we're allowed to use these these asara siyin as a ptur from the chiyuv of ma'aser behema, that itself indicates that he owns this animal. So we don't know exactly what the chiddush is. So again, just running to the finish line, if you'll allow me to do so, my havi Allah, what is the final maskada? Now, the final maskada here is referring back to the original sugya, which is called masuta. That's the sugya of Tokfa Kohen. Obviously, we're not talking about Tokfa Kohen in the literal sense, but the conceptual Tokfa Kohen is the sugya masuta. So let's just review. There's a Beis HaMerchatz, and Reuven and Shimon are arguing over the ownership of this bathhouse. Reuven, or it could have been Shimon, gets up and he's magdish it. Now, the Gemara vacillates back and forth whether or not we have to be concerned about his hegdish. And there were chachamim who were poresh, they didn't want to use the Beis HaMerchatz. And the Gemara says that it all depends upon Tokfa Kohen. What does that mean? That if Reuven would have had, we don't know if he does, but if he has the schus of tkifa, which means that if he would have grabbed onto the masuta and established the chazaka therein, then he already has the ability to be magdishit. Because ma beso bershusaf kol bershusa, that when it comes to hegdesh, you can only be magdish something that's considered bershusa. Now the Gemara considers that since being magdish is amirasol the gevor kibusirasol hejotobi, therefore to some extent being magdish is like a quasi or a replacement of tkifa, of grabbing onto it. But the bottom line is that does the halacha in Choshen Mishpat recognize the validity of a tkifa? If it does, then it means that Reuven has a certain monetary ownership over the Beis HaMerchatz, which can materialize in his tkifa. So just like the Kohen is considered to have monetary ownership over a Safik Bechor, hence we have the problem how the Safik Bechor could be part of Ma'aser Behema of Yisrael, because Ein on the Poter be B'mamono Shel Chavera. So that the Schus Tkifa, if it's validated, and that would mean that the Yisrael would now have to prove his point and bring evidence in order to get the Bechor out of the hands of the Kohen, it means that the Kohen already has a tangible right in Dini Momenus. The fact that we don't know whether it's a Bechor or not already grants him certain monetary rights of ownership in the Bechor. How do those rights express themselves? Materialize in his Tkifa. If that be the case, then the Gemara thinks in the case of Masuta, the same logic should apply. And that means that if he can take advantage of the situation and with his initiative he could grab onto the Masuta and establish a chazaka to the exclusion of anyone else, then that itself, if that is valid, we don't know yet whether that is valid, because that depends on Tosfa Kohen, whether Motzir or Sobiyon or a Motzir or Sobiyon, but on the side that it's valid for Tekifa to operate, then it means that he can go ahead and be Magdashin. Why? Because he has that Schus Mamon which gives him Bailus. You'll say it's not Beso Bershuso. He doesn't have control over the Beis HaMerchatz. The answer is that once he's Magdashin, that itself is an act that demonstrates his, so to speak, his possession over the Masuta. But basically, we're really down to the following issue. If you have a case where you have a Sufik Mamon, and you could theoretically, right, it's all in potential, you could upgrade that suffix moment to an ein motzin or some other through tkifa, that indicates that already now, even before the tkifa, you have certain monetary ownership rights in the object, such that your hegdish is valid, it's meaningful. So the Gemara is now asking, my havila, what's the final conclusion halach l'maisa about the Masuta? Do we have to be poreish from this Masuta, or do we not, based on the fact that Reuven went ahead and he was magdashin? Toshma. The Amar Rav Chiya bar Ovid havi uvda be Rav Chizda. At the time of Rav Chizda was a similar maisa. I don't know exactly whether it was a Masuta or not, but there was some sort of similar maaser where two people were fighting over ownership of an object, and one of them went ahead, took the initiative, was magdashit. V'Rav Chisda Bei Rav Huda. In other words, Rav Chisda went to the Gadol Ador, that's Rav Huda, to ask him the Shaila, whether the Hegdish is valid or not. Upashta, and Rav Huda came to the conclusion, Behad Yom Rav Nachman, based on a different statement of Rav Nachman, not the same statement of Rav Nachman that we had before. And Rav Nachman coined a universal principle in Dini Momenos, Kol Momen She'eno Yochel Lotzio B'dayonim, Higdisho Eino Kadosh. It's not enough that you have the possibility of being tokev and taking the law into your hands. That's not enough to give you rights of beso bershuso, as if to say the potential tkifa is enough to establish your possession over the object such that your hegdish would be valid. But rather, you have to get to the level of yochalo tzio b'dayonim. Not that you take the law into your own hands through tkifa, but you can force the judges, if you have the evidence to do so, to take the money out of so-and-so's hands and put it into your hands. But if it's eino yochalo tzio b'dayonim, in the present situation, status quo, you don't have the weight of evidence to prove that it's yours in a court of law, the dayonim therefore will do nothing to remove the ownership of so-and-so based on your claim, then you don't have the ability of hegdish. Hegdisho eino kodosh. Why? Because the precondition of hegdish is beso. And beso means bershuso. This is not considered bershuso. The fact that you have an abstract right to be tokev is irrelevant. So therefore, the case of Besuta, right now, it's Momen She'eino Yochel Lotzio B'dayonim. He doesn't have any evidence to prove that it's his. Now here, there's a long discussion here. What about the following situation? He was Magdish it, and then he produced evidence. So how do we view it? When it's Yochel Lotzio B'dayonim, is that from the moment that he sues a person in court and he invokes the testimony of two people? Or no? Is it enough that he has these witnesses in his back pocket? He hasn't yet gotten to the point where it became actually before Mamun Sheyochel Otsiyah B'dayonim, but the potential of Mamun Yochel Sano, which we can prove later, that's enough to validate the Hegdish L'Mafreya. So at the moment he was Magdishin, he had not yet produced the witnesses. But since he has these witnesses, therefore it's already considered at that point in time, based on the potential of what's going to happen later on, to be Momon Sheyochel Otzio B'dayonim. So in the note over here, he writes that according to Shita Satosvis, the entire discussion, the Nidon of Masuta, is where the Hegdish is valid, and the Suffolk is whether or not such a Hegdish could be valid. And the final conclusion is that Hegdish is not the same as Tkifa, and the validity of the Hegdish depends only on Yochel Otzio B'dayonim. And even though he could take the initiative and physically take possession over the Masuta, and then it would be Ein Motzio Moso Miyado, so the Tkifa would be validated, but that's not enough to establish enough of Birshuso for the Hegdish to be valid. So the Hegdish right now is invalid. What would be after he was Tokev? That's already a different issue. Because once he was Tokev, now he doesn't have to be Motzi the moment B'dayonim. Why? Because Tokfa Kohen, Ein Motzi no So Miyado, Motzi B'Chavela V'Raya. But Tosis adds another condition. And Tosis says it has to be Shasak U'Lubesov Tzavach. This was one of the more complicated variables in the whole sugya of Tokfa Kohen. There are two shitas of Rishonim about Tkifa. One shita of Rishonim is that Tkifa simply makes him into a muksot, even though he had no legal basis and none of the Dayonim would ever allow him to do the Tkifa. The other shita of the Rishonim, which is Rashi and Tosfos, they're of the opinion that Tkifa is meaningful if it was a Shasak Lubesov Tzavach. What does that mean? That at the time that he was Tokev, the other tzad said nothing, he was silent. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. And then later on he started screaming and he says, why was I silent initially? Because it happened in the presence of Beis Din. You know, this was public knowledge. So I was somech on the Dayanim of Beis Din. And he says the following, The simple understanding of how Gemara is straightforward is that the Masuta remains chulin, it's not Hegdesh. The Gemara is not going to assume that just like in a case where he has Edim in his back pocket, that his Hegdesh is valid, because that's Moment Sheyachalotzio B'dayonim. So too, if there was a Shtika and the Tzad Shekineged didn't say a word, that's considered like a Hodah, and yet the Gemara says that which again, let's review, that according to Shita Satosis, the whole Sugya Masuta is conditional on Shasakalu Besof Tzava. It's not just that in Masuta he grabs onto the Masuta and makes a Chazaka, or in the case of a Safik Bechor, he grabs onto the Bechor. Every case of Takva, for example, in the case of Shnai Mokhs Metalis, requires this condition of Shasakalu Besof Tzava. Why didn't the Gemara indicate here that not only in the case of Mamon Sheyachalotziyah B'dayonim is the Hegdesh valid, the Hegdesh is also valid in the case of what? Of Shasakal B'sof Tzava. And Mesuta, according to Tosus, is exactly that case. It's a case of Shasakal B'sof Tzava. Is therefore Muchach, we see from the way the Gemara presents it here, is that Eina Shtika Nechsheves Kodah. The Gemara is not willing to recognize the Shtik as Hodah, and therefore it remains Momen Sheini Yochalotzi over Dayanah. Even though he'll say, well, wait a minute, the guy was Shosek and Hodah's Baldin Kemeya Eidim, don't be if Shtik is Kodah. Apparently, the final maskana is that Shosak Musov Tzok is not considered a Hodah. And therefore, the Gemara concludes that in the case of Masuta, which is a case of Shtika Uvasov Tzova, it's not a valid Hegdish. The Hegdish is not binding. The Gemara is not happy about this. And the Gemara asks the following. Are you telling me, based on your understanding of Nachman, that if it was Yachol Otziyah B'dayonim, then Igdisho Kadosh, that since he has the potential of convincing the Dayonim that he is in the right, and therefore he should get the Mamon, therefore he can go ahead and be Magnishit, Afal Gavdolo Afke, even though at this moment of time, where is the Mamon? It's sitting there. It's not in his possession. Beis Din has not yet decided that they're going to award this Mamon to him. Says the Gemara, this contradicts the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that even in a case where my Mamon is in your possession, and I have the ability to use Beis Din with my evidence to prove that that moment that you're holding on to is mine, nevertheless, I don't have the ability to be Makdish it. Why? Because you're not willing to give up on it. Right now, you're walking around with this object, and you're holding it with, you know, close to your arms, like a football player holds a football, right? And that's not considered Bershusa. When the Torah says that you can be Makdish something that's Beiso, it's referring to something that you actually have possession over now. So how can you reconcile the statement of Rav Nachman with the principle formulated by Rav Yochanan? Rav Nachman, on the one hand, says it all is totally on Dayanim, that if eventually the Dayanim will take it out of Ruvain's possession and put it in your possession, you can already be Magdish it now. We just look at it down the line. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says, no, if right now, as status quo, somebody is holding on to that object, he's unwilling to budge, even though Beis Din will establish that it's yours, you can't be Magdish it. It's not considered Bershuso. It's not enough to say that it's Mamon Sheyochal Otziyo B'dayon. Father Rabbi Yochanan said, Gazal V'lo Nisyashua Bailim. It means that, let's say somebody stole my object, and I know exactly who stole it. So I'm not going to give up on it. I'm going to hope that, you know, the law is the law. You know, we'll put up a wanted dead or alive sign. But yet, nevertheless, even though all I need is to prove that it's mine and that he stole it from me, which I have evidence to that effect. And not only that, on Lo Nisyashu, I have not yet given up hope. I have full, you know, because usually Gezel together with Yeush somehow removes Bailus. I mean, that's a Sugi Mama Kama. And here's where Rabbi Yochanan makes his famous breakthrough, where he divides a bialis into two into two different elements. One element is called shalo, that means you actually own the object, and the other element is called reshusa, you possess the object. And in the case of hegdesh, says Rabbi Yochanan, in order to have hegdesh, you have to check off both boxes. You need both what? Shalo and reshusa. So Zeh, the Gazlon, he certainly can't be magnish the object. Lufishen shalo, he doesn't own it. And this is before Yeish. Vized, even the Nigzal, who's the rightful owner, Lufishen of reshusa, he doesn't have reshusa over it. Now we're assuming now that we're talking about Gzela, and why was the Nigzal not Messiah? Because it's Yachalotziyah B'dayanit. You know, he, again, he's a little bit afraid of the Gazlon, he's a tough guy, but he'll take him to court, sue him, and he has ample evidence to establish that it's his object that was stolen. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan insists that he can't be magnished at this stage because it's Eidim Rishuso. His vice versa, we see clearly that Yochalotziyah B'dayanit is not enough to make it into what? Base of Rishuso to validate the Hegdesh. Gemara says you're making a big mistake. There's a difference between Metaltolin and Karka. Misavris b'masuta metaltolin askinon masuta b'karkoi askinon. When it comes to an object which is movable, that's called metaltolin, then Rabbi Yochanan makes his statement, and everything depends upon who's in possession. So if somebody is holding the metaltolin and saying it's mine, or I'm not, even if he admits it's not his, but he's not willing to give up on it, you know, he's going to take the ball and run with it, even if you have to fly to Japan, he's not going to give up on it. So then it's considered Yotze Mershuso, and that's called the Maisa Gzela. No, there's Maisa Gzela Metaltolin, because Metaltolin Igzolim means that you can take something out of the Rishus of the Nigzal. It's a very strange halacha, because the man is totally illegitimate, he's an outright thief, but yet the halacha recognizes his action of Gzela as being Mafkia the Rishus of the Nigzal. Even though it's totally illegal. I mean, your guy has to be tied and fettered. But in Metzius, what happens is the object is now being, it was confiscated and it's being held, you know, in a locked up vault, and nobody's going to give you the key. And here Rabbi Yochanan says that's called Yotze Mirshuso. And that's a special halacha that applies to Metaltolin. The Metaltolin is Yotze Mirshuso. That has nothing to do with the Mesuta case. There we're going to invoke the principle of Rav Nachman called Mamon Sheyochel Atziyah B'dayanim. Why? Because the Mesuta is Karka. It's Mechubal HaKarka Ki Karka Dome. And when it comes to Karka, here's where Rav Nachman makes a difference between Yochel Atziyah B'dayanim or any Yochel Atziyah B'dayanim. Nobody can take your Karka out of your Rishus. If you own a piece of real estate in Africa, that's considered your Rishus. And if a bird would fall down from the heavens and fly into your chutz, again, you may need a chutz of mishtameres, whatever it might be, that's considered your rishus. Kol hecha the isa, wherever it's found, is the rishus of the baila isa.
And an exelus.
And that's called karka in an exelus. So therefore, the question of rishusa means, do I have the ability to establish my ownership? Well, you know, you can't just claim, well, you know, I'm being magnished a piece of property, I'm going to be magnished the Empire State Building. I mean, you don't own the Empire State Building, so how can you be magnished it? But if, on the other hand, you can prove with evidence in Bezda that you own the Empire State Building, then there's no chisod of rishus, because your ownership will automatically be gorer your rishus together with it, because karka ain't an exelus. So if you own the Empire State Building, no one can take it out of your rishus, wherever it is. They can claim from now till doomsday and set up, you know, a whole circle of security people around the Empire State Building. That doesn't remove it from your rishus. Karka cannot be removed from the rishus of the Bible. Again, if he's going to be magnishit, how do we know it's his? So the answer is Yochel Otziyah B'dayanim. He has the evidence in his back pocket. In the case of Metaltolin, the entire picture changes. This is a very fundamental Gemara here, in terms of the distinction between Karka and Metaltolin. Rabbi Yochanan says that in Metaltolin we have a problem. Why? Because halacha, the requirements of Hegdesh in Metaltolin are much more demanding. We have to upgrade the standards here, because we need base over shuso, which means that we need that you actually have to have control and possession over the object, this movable object, that establishes your reshus on your ability to be makdish it. If the gazlan is holding on to it, and you have to run after him to get it back from you, you can't be makdish. And here's where we have a whole issue about shomer. What happens if I deposit metaltalin into the hands of a shomer? Can you be magdish something that's in the hands of a shomer? Now halva is a little bit more complicated, because halva is usually an abstract shibud on a debt or a loan. It's not something that's physical. But if lu yitzu, you can have such a thing as a halva on metaltalin, which again, that's complicated. But if it does exist, then once again, it could be that he can be magdish the metaltalin. And why is that? Because the love is not considered to have possession. It's not a yad hamafkia. It was a gazlon is a yad hamafkia. It removes your rishus. But in the case of a shomer, the yad of the shomer is not mafkia the rishus of the bialim.
So even though it's in the shomer's hands,
you still could be makdish. Yeah. This also has to do with what's called yeush. That let's say, for example, I deposited a metaltalin in your possession, and I lost it. You know, I've no memory, no recollection. I don't know where it is on the face of the earth. So, in such a case, would there be yeush? And the answer is no, because if you have something that's in your possession, you just don't know where it is. That's called yeush b'rishus. Yeush b'rishus lo mahani. And the chiddush is that yad ha-shomer ki yad balabayis, and the object is considered to be in your rishus, even though physically it's in the rishus of the shomer.
What is the legal definition of rishus?
I wish I could answer that. You'd probably have to write a PhD thesis on that. Yeah, that's one of those very complicated halakhic concepts. Well, when is it considered rishus? So the Gemara is making a fundamental distinction between mesuta and the case of Rabbi Yochanan. Mesuta is the case of karka. That's considered rishus, so wherever it is, as long as you can prove that it's yours. So
if I give it to a shomer,
right?
So certainly it's mine, right?
But it's in his rishus.
Is it? Yeah.
But you're so the Gemara's on Kadesh. That's not like that, because he's holding it on to you
for you,
and when he's holding on to for you, that's considered bereshuscha. You know, he's protecting it for the mafia, right?
So you could be makdish. Mm-hmm.
Now here we have a kasha of Rabbi Kivager, and you'll see it here in the Gilui Nashas. It's a long, long piece of the Gilui Nashas. I'll just try to touch on whatever I can, and that'll push us forward to the new sugya, which I really want to get to. That's the Shnayim Adukim Betalos, because that really gets us back to the Mishnah of Shnayim Oksim Betalos. So just to give you a summary of or the overview of this very long presentation of the Gilui Nashas, he says the following. Kosher. Halo achiluk bein karkos lemetaltlin hu bazesh karka eina Eilan Nigzal Kinyoni Gzela. Because when we say that Karkated Gzeles, according to Kivager, we can translate that into formulate a different principle, and that is that the Gazel cannot make a Kinyon on Gzela. Again, this is one of those very, very unique halachic statements or principles which I don't think, as far as I know, have any parallel in secular law. But in Jewish law, and this is very paradoxical, a gazlan could create a kinyan gzela. It's mind-boggling. Well, what do you mean a kinyan gzela? How could the law recognize a kinyan gzela on the part of a thief? I mean, that's totally illegitimate. But here's where the halacha differentiates between karka metaltalin. How far would the halacha go in recognizing and validating a new kinyan called kinyani gzela? Only as far as metaltalin is concerned. And in the case of metaltalin, technically, you and I would have said, well, certainly the nigzal, who's the rightful owner, should be able to be magdish it, and it's a case of yachal otzia b'dayanim. But the answer is no. That in metaltalin, the halacha recognizes something called kinyani gzela, and those kinyani gzela stand in conflict. It's like a shnei ksuvim, it's like a tug of war with the reshuso that is necessary for hegdish. So let's just review so far the first point of Rabbi Kivega, so we could go on to the second point. Rabbi Kivega understands that logically you and I would have assumed that a nigzal certainly should be able to be magdish metaltalin even after it was stolen because of the principle of yochel otzio b'dayon. The chiddush of gazlon in Rabbi Yochanan in the case of metaltalin is that the Torah actually validates, as paradoxical as it sounds, the kinyan of the gazlon on your object. You're the rightful owner. You're going to be able to prove that in Bezdin, but nevertheless, the gazlon has a certain kind of a kinyan. We'll see later on that the kinyonic zela might be so effective that if the object goes up in value, the gazlon is the one who's going to gain. You know, to him will accrue the increment, the benefit of the higher value. Again, that's not here in Rabbi Kivega. I'm just throwing that out. So comes along this new halacha called kinyonic zela. And it somehow undermines the birshuso of the nigzal, such that now the nigzal, despite the fact that it's moment she yochel otzio b'dayonim, cannot be magish. Now we go on to point number two of Rabbi Kivega. Now we get to the Masuta case. The Masuta case, says Rabbi Kivega, is a case of karka, which is eino birshuso shel echad mem klal. Now this is a very strange premise of Rabbi Kivega, and he says the following: that b'mesuta eino b'rshusa shalechem em klal. Okay, that we said already. Rak omar shemakdisha mesulo. What the Gemara establishes based on Rav Nachman is that he could be magdish the mesuta, even though it's not b'rshusa. Now, as we understood in Rav Nachman, that the reason why in the case of Karka, since Karka ain't an exilus, the Nigzal could be Magdishit, if it's Yochel Otzio B'dayonim, because we thought that's called Bershuso. Karka ain't an exilus means it's always Bershuso Shel Nigzal. Rav Kivega came to a different conclusion. And his conclusion was that Faker, the chiddush of Masuta is that afal pi, despite the fact that it's eino b'rshus, so nevertheless he can be magdish. As if to say that this is a special halach in hegdish, that you know your power, your ability to be magdish karka is so great that even though it's eino b'rshuscha, because now the gazlan is, you know, he's taking possession, you know, he's like a squatter and he's defending the karka, nevertheless you could be magdish. Says Rabbi Kiveger, bazeh, if that be the case, then afim hoya metaltalin, sorach lios hadin shekdesho hegdesh. If you're telling me that even in the case of metaltalin, that's how Rabbi Kiveger understood it, I'm sorry, starting again, even in the case of what? Of karka, Rabbi Kivega understood that it's yotze b'rshuso, afal pichein, there's a din that you could be magdishin. If that be the case, then why not apply the same thing to metaltalin? That's where Rabbi Kivega gets confused. He says, even in metaltalin, what are you going to tell me? You can't be magdishin because yotze b'rshuso. Why is that different from the gzeil of karka? So the achronim say they don't understand what this gilyan hashas is all about. Adarab, on the contrary, from our sugya, and that will apply whether or not the gazlan has kinyon gzeila. It's irrelevant. The fact that the gazlan is holding on and he refuses to let go on his grasp, his possession of your metaltalin, that itself makes it a tana b'rshuso. Why? Because let's say it this way: the gazlan can now be mavriach. Mavriach means he can ship it off, you know, to the Far East and sell it there to some fence over there. You know, say anyone who's agreeing to sell it. Masha'enke b'karka, in the case of karka, no one's going to buy this karka from a gazlan. And even if they don't know he's a gazlan, they're going to check it out before they buy it from him. So you can't steal something and be mavriach it, and that's why it's called birshuso. So not the way Rabbi Kivega understood it, that karka is also eino b'rshuso after the gzeila, because the gazlan is, you know, he puts his sentries up around the karka, puts up a fence, an electric fence, and therefore you can't be magdish it. No, the reason why you can't be, I'm sorry, And Rabbi Kivenga therefore comes to the conclusion he doesn't understand why metaltel you cannot be magnish, but in the case of kaki you can be magnish, since in Rabbi Kivenga's favorite reference both are ein b'shusa. And the answer is that Rabbi Kivenga seems, and again Rabbi Chana is going to come to try to defend Rabbi Kivenga, but Rabbi Kivenga at the face of it seems to have missed the point of Agamara. The point of Agamara is that you cannot take karka out of the reshus of the violin. It's always b'reshus. In the case of metaltel, forget about whether there are kinyoni gzeila, we validate kinyoni gzeila, there aren't kinyoni gzeila, we don't validate it, it's irrelevant. It's the very fact that the gazlan has control over your object. He'll ship it off to who knows where. So he says that the achronim try to make some sense out of Rabbi Kivenga. You know, usually Gilyon HaShas is what we call Eisen. You know, you can't, especially when he ends with the words, with the letters Tzadi Ayin. Sometimes it's Tzayin Ayin Gimel, but here it's only a Tzadi Ayin. And then he writes, V'ayin v'sefer chochmas manoach. I don't have access to that sefer. Shenokad Shesavru Shesavar Shemidubar B'masuta. I don't know, it's a different kind of masuta. I don't know, whatever it is. So I just would just say. So let's take a break here. If anybody, oh okay, I have the link, so fine. Alright. Now Rabosai, let's pick up this photocopy.